Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life in Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. The first series of shows has been a general overview of the big picture of debt in four stages. 1. Pre-debt, before we take it on. 2. The comfortable stage of having debt. 3. The slippery slope. And 4. The apparent abyss one can fall into financially, which is insolvency or bankruptcy. This show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Get notebook, paper, and a pen for later in the show. As is always, we start with news related to debt and debt facts for the week. Layoffs continue in the airline industry. United, AirTrain, and Frontier have just announced massive layoffs. We have had 21 airfare increases this year, and one commentator is predicting that we will have at least 21 new increases before the end of the year. Many of the smaller airports will have no air travel at all, or only a few flights will become available. For you coffee drinkers, Starbucks is increasing the number of U.S. company-operated store closures as part of its transformation strategy. Starbucks has announced a decision to close approximately 600 underperforming company-operated stores in the U.S. market. Starbucks now expects to open fewer than 200 new U.S. company-operated stores in fiscal 2009. Not so long ago in April, Starbucks had announced plans to expand by about 400 net stores per year through 2011. This, however, recent occurrence is a substantial cut from that plan. This is more bad news for strip mall owners throughout the country. So when we look at the airlines and Starbucks, we see American Air, for example, is going to lay off approximately 900 flight attendants as of August this year. This will eliminate most of the junior flight attendants. And as for Starbucks, about 12,000 employees will be dismissed with the 600 store closing. Going over to mortgages, mortgage servicers, those who are servicing the trusts and portfolios that actually own the mortgages, have a secret. The secret is that servicers don't want you to know that they can make more money off of homeowners when they keep the loan in default. A former employee of loan servicer EMC, Miranda Henderson, tells the inside story of why so many people can't get their mortgage current. She said, quote, "We made more money servicing loans that were in default than on loans that were performing. We, EMC, would look to acquire the servicing rights to defaulted loans in other pools due to the money factor." Miranda said the rights of the servicers were not consistent with the rights of the investors. Loans in default are moneymakers for EMC and every other servicer. And from personal experience, I know that this is also true. Looking at the global economy, in Basel, Switzerland, the Bank for International Settlements sees the economy near the tipping point. They see it entering a slowdown so severe that it will transform the current period of rising inflation into a period of falling prices. The Bank for International Settlements, which is the central bank for central banks, said the impact of rising food and energy prices on consumers' incomes, combined with heavy household debts and a pullback in bank lending, may lead to a massive slowdown in global growth that, quote, could prove to be much greater and longer lasting than would be required to avoid a major recession. I'd like to share an article posted by Professor Elizabeth Warren about credit checks. She says, quote, Late yesterday, I recorded an interview with Terry Gross on Fresh Air. She is one of my favorite interviewers. Smart, and what a voice. She had called me to ask about credit reporting agencies. What made the interview stand out was her introduction. She told a story about her husband's trip through credit reporting hell. Her husband's experience is no real surprise. After all, a 2004 PIRG study, and PIRG, as an aside, is the Public Interest Research Group, which is an advocate for public interest. That study found that 87% of credit reports had errors, and 1 in 4 had an error big enough to change a credit score. Consumer Federation of America reported that 31% of credit reports had an error that would change a credit score by 50 points or more. If a serious error hasn't happened to you, then it has happened to someone you know. Because Terry Gross's husband could hire a lawyer, the problem was eventually fixed, but not until he had spent a lot of time and a lot of worry, and of course, some money. The quote continues, "Starting the interview with a personal story about the impact of an error raised in an important question," and this, of course, is to Professor Warren. Professor Warren's question is this, quote, "Why should consumers be saddled with the responsibility to monitor the errors of credit reporting agencies? It is my information about me. Someone else is collecting it, creating errors, and passing those errors along to other people. Those errors can cost me a job, denial of homeowner's insurance, a higher premium on my car loan, a higher price to buy a car even for cash, and of course, a higher price for a mortgage, a credit card, a car loan, or any other loan. And the system says, in effect, it is my problem to monitor the information. It isn't enough that I don't impair my own credit. It is also my problem to find errors that the company has put in, to document the errors in order to correct them, to fight with the company if they won't believe me, to check to make sure the errors were removed, and to make sure those errors never reappear. I can even pay for insurance to help me if a credit reporting company makes a mistake." So Professor Warren continues, "Since I already have a full-time job and a life outside that job, I resent this capture of my time. I also believe that a law that puts the burden on consumers to correct errors and puts no penalty on the credit reporting companies for passing along the bad information is designed to encourage a high error rate. There are simply not enough incentives for the credit issuers to spend their money to reduce errors in the credit reporting system or to make correction cheap and quick." She continues, "In some states, it is possible to lock a credit report to stop all activity. That helps prevent future errors, but it still puts the burden on the customer. A lot of people end up paying for bad credit reports. Many never know it because they don't know that the price quoted for insurance or a car was based on their credit score. They will just be poorer than they would have been if the credit reporting companies had more incentives to get it right." So that's the points from Professor Warren. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Now I'd like to move on to taking control of your personal situation by creating balance for yourself and by yourself, being in the comfortable stage of having debt, as it were. I'd like to begin with an important credit. The thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these presentations are from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Mamelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors, and I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. We'll start out this show with a recap of last week's show. You can visit prior shows at www.liptak.com/lifeanddebt, all lowercase letters, liptak.com/lifeanddebt. And it's good to listen to those, so anything that we've covered in the past, this is an ascending educational program. A lot of the points here will be built on what has been formally presented. We have been discussing the must-have version or portion of your income, the bare necessities, the things that you really can't live without. And last week, we were talking about how to make those closer to 50% of your disposable net income by reducing your car payments. Having transportation is a big part of the entire bare necessities equation for most people. What we suggested is that you buy used. All the facts show that this costs a lot less than buying new, even with repairs. If you're a little uptight, get a certified pre-owned vehicle with a warranty and drive it until it won't drive anymore. Of course, make sure that it's safe and mechanically sound, but even with repair bills, it is immensely cheaper than buying new. Another point was never lease a vehicle. Car companies make the most money from these deals. For you, it costs way more than even buying new. Another thing to do is to shop around for the best rate on a loan for the used car you buy. Don't get trapped into that monthly payment idea. Oh, you can make this monthly payment. And what they do is they stretch it out. Sure, you can afford it, but they're stretching it out over 5 and now even 6 years. And many big car companies own these lenders, and this is actually where they, in fact, make most of their money. So they want you to have long-term repayment loans, even if you're only apparently paying a comfortable amount each month. Just as we discussed with mortgages, do comparison shopping. Go to local banks and credit unions, not just what the car company is offering when you're purchasing, because you may be able to get a better deal. And just to reflect that with new cars, they lose value as soon as you drive them out of the showroom, and the value continues to drop sharply, and soon you're upside down on your loan. Sometimes we say you're underwater. Your loan stays high for a long time as you pay the bulk of the interest first before you start paying substantial premium. So on a long-term loan, you have a vehicle worth very little and a large balance on your loan. So you are paying a new car price on a quickly used vehicle in its value in the marketplace. So that's one way to reduce your bare necessities closer to that 50%. Another point was if you are renting furniture, appliances, washers, dryers, TVs, and anything else, get it back. Call the lease company and give it back to them. Find out how fast you can get rid of it. These are usually very bad financial deals. Renting to own is even a bigger burden on you financially. You are charged 3 to 10 times too much for these, and the quality is almost always much poorer. You can call and usually quit these contracts and give this stuff back, and certainly do it quickly so you save yourself some money. In all cases, get something you can afford with cash, even if it is from used furniture and appliance stores on eBay or on Craigslist or at flea markets, garage sales. It's a much better place to be financially. And again, this will reduce your bare necessities amount. Another place we talked about reducing your bare necessities is health insurance, trimming the bills. If you get it through a job, look carefully at lower cost options for all the basics, where there are no added costs for things that don't make sense to you. Visit the National Committee for Quality Assurance online, www.ncqa.org, to get information on your plan at work, and do the math. Ask your benefit planner about the cheaper plan and if there are any complaints about it. If not, it may save you substantial money without sacrificing your health. Another thing is to get a flex plan, flexible spending account, or a health savings account if you have a small company or are self-employed. And if you are sure you will have some medical expenses that can be covered each year, you can put that in these plans, and what you save here is taxes. And this will be a very good savings. The money put into these accounts is not considered in your income, and the discount in effect is about 30% on each medical bill. Also, if you and your spouse both have medical plans, do the math and see which is the most cost-effective approach. and make sure that there is no double coverage if you are paying twice. Now, if you don't have health insurance, you really should, as everyone needs it. This saves you from going broke if there is a medical event. Even small things can be very costly, like appendectomies or slipped discs. Health insurance gives you the best possible care. And research has shown that if you get seriously ill, you are more likely to die from your illness if you are uninsured. So this is an investment in yourself. Saying I hardly ever get sick or it costs too much is not good thinking. But if you hardly ever do get sick, health insurance with a high deductible policy is definitely doable. If you feel it costs too much, check it out. Get some quotes from a variety of brokers. Go with a high deductible to ward off the serious illness. Go with the no-frills plan that covers serious illness, which is most important if that kind of event comes up. And also, if you leave your job, hold on to that COBRA at least for a while so you can shop around for less expensive insurance, because uninterrupted coverage gives you a better deal on the next policy. As we also said, if you have kids, check out Medicaid. Many states offer free or reduced cost insurance for families of moderate income and for people with certain disabilities. It is not just for poor people. Look on the internet to see if your kids qualify and go to www.cms.hhs.gov for Medicare and Medicaid services. Again, that's www.cms.hhs.gov. Of course, if you had been in the military, check out the VA kinds of plans. And for everyone, always try to buy through a group plan, professional groups or unions. These are offered preferred rates and they will be useful to you. The government's offering these and promoting these discount cards, but remember, these do not replace real insurance, so don't go for that. And don't buy specialty kinds of insurance for specific problems, like cancer only. You want a policy that covers all medical problems, not just one or two. Another kind of way to cut your insurance is to stay away from low annual limits on policies. These spell trouble. These are not good policies. For example, everything covered up to $10,000. This is not going to cover any real serious illness, and maybe it'll cover one day at a hospital. So be careful on those kinds of policies. Don't go for them. Practically speaking, your insurance policy cap should be around $1 million. And finally, in recap, disability insurance, as I said earlier, 1 in 4 chance you will face a spell of disability. So this should be part of your basic plan. Each year, more than 300,000 people without disability insurance will go bankrupt. So get it from your employer if it is offered. If shopping on your own, get several quotes and you'll be glad you have disability insurance. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Another way to cut your bare necessities costs is through child care costs. Now, of course, this is a sensitive issue. However, child care can be quite expensive, and there has to be the right fit for the child. But always consider shopping around based on price. Talk with other parents. Where do they send their kids? What is the cost? And check the range of options, churches, synagogues, YMCA, or even families teaming up. And check the area where you work also, not just where you live. It can be extraordinarily different in different neighborhoods in terms of the cost. Also ask about discounts for 2 kids, etc. And don't forget, when it comes time to do your taxes, to take your child care deduction for the costs. So now we've done all these things and looked at our bare necessities, and we should be at 50% of our disposable net income to be comfortably within the bare necessities plan. If not at 50% or not even close, it's time to take a look at some more radical changes, putting you in line with the reality of your income. A new job, moving, these can be difficult, if not painful, issues to contend with. yet may be the only way to real financial peace and progress in the long term. To get to the bare necessities, you either have to cut your costs or you have to increase your income. And maybe a traditional job would be better, for example, if your self-employment business is foundering. Even temporarily, I know a lot of people with self-employment businesses don't want to give it up, yet the traditional job can offer not only the higher income, but some benefits that you can't pay for yourself. Or maybe you need a better education in order to get a promotion in your job. So these are things you have to think about. If it's been more than 2 years since you checked out other companies that employ similarly skilled people, then maybe now's the time to do it. Hunt for a job. Get a job hunter. Headhunter, they call them. And you get information. You can take as much time as you have because you already do have a job. But look, use those placement agencies and check online postings. My wife does this. And believe me, I can't believe all of the jobs that she comes up with just right here in the state of Iowa, in Iowa City, in Des Moines. There are many, many places you can go to that are offering jobs. Also, tell your friends you're looking for a better paying job. This gets the word out and it can help you. Another thing you can also do in your work area is check out extra part-time work, without it being fatiguing or cumbersome on you. But many of you have substantial work experience, skills, hobbies that you can share with other people as a teacher or as a tutor, or doing some things, moonlighting, my dad used to call it, this kind of extra work that is actually a joy to do because it's in an area you like and it will bring in some extra. So this is one area to consider and analyze when you're thinking about your bare necessities. It's your income. Now, it could also be that you need more education and training. Now, this is a short-term effort for really long-term rewards. It's a known fact that people with degrees get much more income. Statistically, the median income of college graduates is 63% higher than the median earnings of high school graduates, according to the director of Syracuse University Career Services. And among female adults, the median income of college graduates is 70% higher than high school graduates, while for men, the median income is 63% higher for college graduates than for high school graduates. So, of course, this is substantial. And getting that degree may be well worth your while. As a caveat here, I want to let you know about student loans. You have to be very careful dealing with those. Actually seek some expert advice. Go for programs that aren't as costly, that will give grants and scholarships if you possibly can, because student loans can be something that are out of proportion to the earnings that you make. But that degree in and of itself is going to bring you more money. When we look at the more global nature of our economy and the competition we're facing from other countries for lower wage labor, it makes more and more sense, and it's more important for people to have some form of post-high school education. And the statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics are quite revealing. At the doctoral degree level, the median weekly earnings in U.S. dollars is about $1,450. The unemployment rate for doctoral people is about 1.4%. If you have some kind of professional degree, your income is, again, about $1,500 per week, and your unemployment rate is about 1.1%. A master's degree is about $1,200 a week for your median weekly earnings in U.S. dollars, and the unemployment rate is about 1.7%. A bachelor's degree, $970 median weekly earnings, and the unemployment rate is 2.3%. An associate degree is a two-year degree, $730 median weekly earnings, and a 3% unemployment rate. Some college, without even having a degree, you're at $675 median weekly earnings and a 3.9% unemployment rate. A high school grad is now below $600 for median weekly earnings, $595, and a 4.3% unemployment rate. And not finishing high school, you're under $420 for median weekly earnings and at a 6.8% unemployment rate. And these figures are unemployment and earnings for workers 25 years and older by educational attainment, and their earnings for full-time wage and salary workers. So you see there's a very large difference between the lower echelons of education and the higher levels of education in what a person can make. And even that student loan can be comfortably paid if it's done wisely. So this is really an important way to increase your bare necessities by increasing your income. Now, if one spouse is at home, that is an ideal in a traditional economy, but we have an economy that is based on two incomes over the last 30 years, and so it may not make sense anymore in today's economy built on the two-income model for one person to be at home exclusively full-time. We want to raise our children properly, and that's very important, but in economic terms, a part-time job can get some of the bills covered. This can be a temporary thing to get some of the major debts paid off. And in fact, if possible, to do a little child care kinds of activities at home. Person has to stay at home to be with kids. That can bring in some more income. Or some kind of cottage industry type of activity at home can bring in some more income while a person is staying at home. And also internet-based kinds of activities that bring in a flow of income would help with this overall concern of increasing the net family income to meet the bare necessities. And the final tip for the week is periodically get your FICO score. This gives you some idea of what the creditors think about you. Your FICO score is read like this. If it's between 720 and 850, that's excellent. You should be getting the best financing terms and represents the best score range. Between 700 and 719, that's very good, qualifies a person to receive favorable financing. Between 675 and 699, that's average, you'll qualify for most loans. Between 620 and 674, that's subprime, may qualify for a loan, but you'll have to pay a higher interest rate. Between 560 and 619, you're considered a risky debtor, might have trouble getting a loan, and between 500 and 599, you're considered a very risky debtor, and you need to work on improving your rating. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.